The price will have to go up because the governments have to print money. You know, like it's what Greg Foss always said. It says it's just math. 30% of the income tax revenue is used to pay off the interest on the debt, right? So as an American, you work, if you work full time, you work one, maybe almost 2 days a week to help your government pay the interest on money they borrowed before you were probably born. Is Bitcoin still decentralized and secure? If yes, then, you know, I tell the voice in my head to shut up. And, you know, I think that's the test. And that's why it's also so psychological and spiritual at the same time. All right. Well, this is a crossover episode. So I'm going to welcome Brandon Keys to Bitcoin for Millennials.
Yeah. So, and thanks for coming on the State of Bitcoin, man.
Boom. We're here. Yeah. I think I'll have something fun to start with. I talked to Tuur de Meester and Tomer Strohleit on previous episodes of the podcast. And they both shared that they thought it was really nice that there's like this new wave of people doing podcasts and educational content, right? Because with every cycle of Bitcoin, it's basically like people adopt Bitcoin. Some people drop off when the price drops, right? And then some people stay and they get invited, you know, to contribute to Bitcoin. And, you know, in whatever way, we both decided to start a podcast. And they share that, you know, they kind of see that like new wave of people start to contribute and share their knowledge or talk to people like on a podcast. And that in that also like reaches again new people that then get to study Bitcoin and adopt it, etc. And so on. And yeah, I wanted to ask you, like, how do you experience that? Like, what type of reactions do you get on YouTube or in real life? What do people think of your efforts?
Yeah, I mean, I always love going to the conferences and kind of meeting Bitcoiners in person because, you know, it's great. You know, I get some people that will recognize me. But, you know, I've been going to a lot of these conferences for a few years now. So it's kind of like a lot of the same familiar faces, but I mean, which is outstanding. But I do always see and meet new people who are getting involved into this space every single conference, every single year and everything like that. So it just seems to be, yeah, an ever-changing landscape and it keeps developing. So, you know, I think there's a lot of great things going on in the Bitcoin space. And it's just, you know, how can you not be bullish with everything that's going on? I know that price action's kind of wobbly. Maybe we can get into that a little bit. But, you know, I think from everything, it's just more and more companies popping up, more and more great things popping up. And I mean, we had Trump, RFK, like presidential candidates for the US at the last Bitcoin conference in Nashville, and big people going to Amsterdam, speaking there, you know, I mean, all these great things. And it's just, yeah, I mean, it's incredible to see. I didn't think we would be where we're at right now when I first got into it. So I don't know how you're feeling about all this. But yeah, man, it's absolutely crazy. And it's truly humbling to see, you know, people recognize me from my work and everything.
Yeah, I always call that like the magic of the internet, right? Like we sit down right now, we just have a conversation, we have fun for an hour, and then, you know, we just share it on the internet, and you kind of never know who it reaches, right? I even so last weekend this week when I was in at the Amsterdam conference, I had a woman come up to me and say like, "Oh, I want to thank you for your work, and I listened to all the podcasts," and I was like, "Wow, that's so crazy," you know, like that. Yeah, you can have an impact with the way you think, right? And I think that's also the goal, at least for me with the podcast, like just create so many touch points that, you know, slowly but surely people will be like, "Huh, I never thought about it like that. Maybe I should get into it," right? And I think that's the power of doing content like this. And it's really fun to see that, you know, behind the comments or behind the messages, there's real people, just as we were there at one point watching, you know, maybe some of the more OGs in the Bitcoin content space and having the same experience. So I think it's really, I'm really grateful to experience that. Like, doesn't matter where my podcast goes. For me, it's personally already a success when I see those people, you know.
Yeah. And like, you never know, like, how content is going to touch somebody or like affect somebody, right? I mean, like, you know, you and I could interview the same guest, but, you know, they could word it a little bit differently in your podcast or in mine. And, you know, it just kind of resonates with somebody. Or, you know, maybe You know, I got those Americans that like to watch me because I'm American. Maybe somebody likes to watch you because you're European. You know, you never really know, man. It could be the blonde hair. It could be the swoop, dude. Somebody likes your hairstyle, and that's why they're tuning into you. Who knows, man? So, you know, all these little things. I think just you know, more content the better. You know, it's going to reach somebody some way, shape, or form, and bring them to Bitcoin, which is the ultimate goal.
So how did you get started? When was your calling, like, okay, I'm going to contribute to this thing?
Yeah, so I guess it all kind of aligns with like my orange pill story somewhat. So I ran track in college, you know, big time former athlete, just kidding. You know, I was not too shabby, but anyway, long story short, I had a lot of teammates that were a class above me. So they all graduated. We kept a group message. We went to grad schools all over the country. Why this is important is because while I was in grad school, I was like, we're all going to start making money. So we need to figure out what to do with that money. So I was doing a dive into personal finance, and I started, you know, researching all this stuff. So I, you know, would tell them all about it. Hey guys, look into this, Bitcoin, and fell on deaf ears, except for one of my friends. He told me to kind of get into, or he kept asking me questions. So eventually COVID broke out, and I was like, why don't we just learn out loud? We started the Twitter account and a blog, Substack. I started writing first, actually. And so I got into that, and yeah, started that like April 21. So I've been doing it for a little bit. And then he got a job in the Bitcoin space, and decided to quit doing the content. Kind of a push from his employer at the time. And from there, he's like, you know, you're good behind the camera. Why don't you start, you know, doing a podcast? And we built up, you know, a couple thousand Twitter followers at that time. So I was like, all right, you know, I'll just start reaching out. And yeah, the people in the Bitcoin space were pretty receptive. And so it's actually turned out to be an experience I didn't think that would lead me to this. So yeah, a lot of crazy things. But what about you, man? What's your orange pill story? How did you get started in the podcast space?
Well, the podcast was really came from like a period of, I think, like 3-4 weeks last year, when I had some conversations with some millennial friends. So my podcast is called Bitcoin for Millennials. And yeah, I think of them as smart and entrepreneurial, etc. And but when we talk about Bitcoin or the problem, rather, you know, the reason of existence of Bitcoin, that the fact that the money is broken and that it steals time and energy from you after you expended that time and energy already, and after you got your monetary reward for the value that you added, I also felt kind of like on deaf ears. You know, like, it's, people think it's just a nuisance, or they think it's too difficult to understand. For example, I have one friend who made quite a lot of money by selling his company, and I asked him, like, hey, you know, if you want to get 100K from the bank or 200K in cash, how do you think that's going to go? And then he said, yeah, I don't know, maybe they don't have it, but that will take a few days or something, and then I'll get it. And, you know, I was already ultra triggered, you know, sitting next to him in the car being like, but okay, if you spend like 7 years building a company, right, and someone buys your company and you get rewarded for that, the moment you put it in the bank, it's literally not yours anymore, right? Because when you call the bank and say, like, well, I want 100K in cash, I have way more than that in your bank, right? And, well, you get a person on the phone who goes through a checklist. Okay, oh, that's above the maximum threshold, right? Well, first question, what are you going to use it for? When do you need it? Blah, blah, blah. And so I try to explain to him, like, that, for me, the mechanism that I have in my head is that it is not yours anymore. Even if you would want it, you know, even on the contract, it says, you know, this is this and this person's account at our bank, you know, it is not your property anymore. And it's interesting because I learned the word property from English, and there's not really a good word in my language. So like, property and ownership are two different things, basically, right? You can own something on paper, but you might not hold it as your property at the same moment. And once I realized the difference between those words, that's when I also kind of changed my pitch toward him. Like, do you, yeah, so it's not like, do you own it, right? But is it your property? So I tried to translate that for him. And now slowly, well, eventually he has one Bitcoin now, basically because, you know, I just said, please buy one. Yeah. And if you ever think of selling, you call me and I say no. And then, you know, you don't do anything. So it was basically kind of a period of 3-4 weeks that I had like three of these conversations where I was like, okay, you are intelligent, you're entrepreneurial, you know me, you know my diligence, you know my journey in Bitcoin. And I just really want to show you. And it just really fell on deaf ears. And then I thought, okay, well, how can I reach my millennial friends, basically, right? Everyone has like a young family, or they're thinking about it, or they're at a certain point in their career. That's also in a time, by the way, I went to like the millennial subreddit. You should go there sometime. It's so interesting. People are so nihilistic. They don't have hope for the future, right? There's topics that say like, oh, am I doing it right? Like, or where is this heading to? Like, they are doing all these things that they were taught to do, right? Like go to a good school, be a good athlete, right? Get a good job, get a house, get a mortgage, get a blah, 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 all these things. But yeah, a lot of these things that they were taught are not even attainable for them. So I feel that millennials really have this problem that they don't know they have. Well, obviously, we think Bitcoin is the best solution to, you know, start building and growing your wealth. So I wanted to focus on them. And well, so that was my thought. And then in the same weeks, I had like two or three calls like this, where I talked with other Bitcoiners I knew from Twitter. And at the end, we were like, could have been nice that we recorded this and just shared it with others. And then I thought, well, one plus one is two. So maybe I should start a podcast. No experience in making a podcast or figuring out like sound and the tech and YouTube and all that stuff. But yeah, I like being a practitioner. So I thought, okay, maybe a nice challenge. So I gave myself one goal, which is making 100 episodes. That's the, kind of like the Mr. Beast strategy. He says, make 100 videos of whatever you want, and then you figure out if it's any good and if you like it, etc. So that's kind of how I started with the podcast. And yeah, my orange pill story is lots of different touch points over the past 10 years. I always say like I bought at 400, I sold everything at 4,000. Now I have less than before. I did the shit coins, I did the ICOs, the NFTs, all these things. So yeah, it's a slow journey with a lot of touch points. And eventually I realized that the money is very broken. It's not yours when it's in the bank. You know, the number in your banking app is a number in a centralized database that the Russians know where it is so they can bomb it, and then the money is gone. Basically, that's now my pitch, right? Bitcoin is verifiable, open, transparent, trustless. So like all these properties that we know. And slowly but surely, I just moved there with my mind and challenging what I thought was true, what I saw technologically in crypto and all these things. That's all nonsense. And we should all focus on Bitcoin because it's the money for everyone. So that's a quick summary of 10 years, I think. Yeah.
I mean, you know, I think on that, right. I mean, you're kind of talking about the millennials and how that resonated with them. And I always think, you know, back to like a lot of my friends who still haven't found Bitcoin, a lot of them will bring to me some random penny stock or something like that, because they're always trying to hit it big, or that this stock is going to be the next booming, next Bitcoin. You know, it's the Bitcoin in 2015. That's what I hear that nomer so many times. But, you know, it's interesting because they all got to try to analyze, do all these different things, you know, try to basically become stock traders, or, you know, like hedge fund managers of their own personal hedge fund. Top of their
battling real hedge fund managers, right?
Yeah,
that's the point.
And they got to do it with less money and on top of their 9-to-5 job. So, I mean, with all that too, I think it's like, you know, it's really tough for the millennial generation just because of all the inflation that, you know, we've experienced through all these years, man. So yeah, I truly resonate with that. And I think that's why I was trying to shout the message similar to you to my friends. I'm like, guys, you don't see this? Like, what are you looking at? You know?
Are you looking for the best way to store your seed phrase? Well, I've got it for you. It's Stampseed. They've got the number one punch place where you can order a full-on package where they've got every single thing. They've got all the letters. You could just get it in there. And they've got this sick, sick hammer, which they've engineered to make it so easy for you to punch in that titanium steel plate and store your seed phrase in the most secure way possible. So go ahead and get your Bitcoin off of these exchanges and use promo code GREENCANDLE for 15% off. They're helping power their show. They've got the Bitcoin logo. You can punch it into your seed phrase as well if you could see it here. They've got a lot of cool stuff. And now I'm helping empower you to get your Bitcoin off an exchange utilizing Stampseed and storing your seed phrase in the most secure way possible. Now get to it. All right, back to the show.
Yeah. Well, what you said, I think, is one of my biggest, I want to say, like, key points to understanding, right? Like, and I think Peter Dunworth, I don't know if you know him, he's from Australia, he kind of taught me this. So he's like a professional asset manager, right? A risk manager for high net worth individuals. This is literally his job, is to manage money and grow the wealth of people. And he told me, everything is risk, right? That just being born is risk. Entire life is risk. And so whatever you do with your job or your venture is risk. Right. So you leave your family. That's also a risk. So you go out there and you do things during the day trying to add value, and you get a reward. You come home, and then because the reward that you get is so broken, you have to take more risk to mitigate the debasement of this money. Right. As you said. And so people think they should become investors and research all this stuff, but they are battling people like Peter that do that thing the entire day. And there's even companies that, you know, and like these flow trader type companies that shoot up their own satellites so they have faster internet to trade faster in this stock investing game. And then you're like in your attic with your little laptop, you know, trying to beat these professional people. It's, yeah, I don't know. Like, if it's fun, totally do it, right? But if you want to spend time with your family, but you're forced to become this investor guy and join all these trading groups and figure out all the penny stocks, you know, that's not the best way to spend your time. And once you realize that, I think then your mind can kind of open to, okay, is there an asset that I can store my economic energy in that doesn't require me to go out there and you know, after my job and gather more information and take risk and trade and blah, blah, blah. And well, yeah, I think that's Bitcoin. Bitcoin makes me sleep better. I don't know about you, but I don't trade anything. I don't do stocks, nothing of that. No, I just try to add value, earn money, and any excess money I save in Bitcoin.
Yeah, 100%. And I think that that's going to be a wave that people start to come in here pretty soon. You know, for better or for worse, the number go up is always going to be the big driver here, right? So. You know, I definitely think we're in a period of a lot of inflation, and I think that that's going to bring more people into Bitcoin, similar to like what we saw in the 2020 times, right? I mean, we saw it shoot from 4K to 69K during that time with massive amounts of money printing. I'm under the belief that that's probably going to come here again soon, so that'll bring more people in. I mean, you know, more and more things, whether it's the ETFs, Bhutan mining Bitcoin, El Salvador getting involved with it, like all these countries, companies putting Bitcoin on their balance sheet. I think all these touch points are, you know, great for people. But once they start to see the number go up, that'll bring more people in. And, you know, by then it might be too late. And I think, like, you know, all the FOMO that we're seeing, FOMO money that we're seeing on the sidelines this cycle makes it really different. But I think that that's going to bring in a lot more people just because there's more money in it, and there's more, which means more eyeballs on it too.
Yeah, I think so. I always thought, you know, 5 years ago or something, I thought if we ever break a K, that's going to melt the internet, right? Like, people are going to be like, oh my God, does this thing still exist? You know, and now it's 100K, this magic internet coin is 100K. Right now, I'm not that sure, to be honest. So I went to the conference this week. There were some like mainstream kind of media channels and some more mainstream like YouTube media channels that made like little reports on it. And if I see the current comments, like comments right now, it's all like, these people are crazy, they are sheep, they can't think for themselves. Like those are comments on YouTube, right? So I personally agree or hope that it's true what you just said, but if I look at those comments, I'm not that sure. But it's also that way, like I love the psychological, philosophical, spiritual dimensions of Bitcoin, because eventually, you know, you cannot orange peel someone else. As you just said, like, that you were talking to your friends and you want them to see it and you're annoyed, you know, and like I said, like I was in a car and I was triggered because I love my friend and I want him to understand it, right? Like you cannot orange pill another person. This other person has to get to a point where they realize, I never thought about what money is, but it's always worked for me, right? What is it? Why do I think it's okay if there's an external group of people or an external factor that influences the value of this money that I spent my time and energy on, and they think it should be devalued with at least 2% a year, but in reality it's more, you know, like this is probably like question number 10, but I mean, like, that's kind of the path that you go on, right? Like someone has to get to a point where they realize, either rationally, you know, they read a piece of information and they're like, that's strange, or more like from an ego perspective, like, why are these people doing better in life? Why are they happier? Why am I so insecure about the future? Why are so many smart people talking about this Bitcoin thing? Or, you know, like, so, and we talked about these different touch points. That's why we need to never stop talking about Bitcoin, even when it's so logical for us, right? We have to create all these touch points where people get triggered in some way to then realize, what do I actually know? And then hopefully have enough courage to challenge, you know, their thoughts or beliefs that they had that they never really questioned or thought about. Yeah,
I mean, it's all about just like breaking the mold, right? Breaking down you know, what they that their belief system, right? Like kind of undoing the traditional education system, just going from there. But yeah, I mean, like the 100K mark will 100% break the internet, dude. I mean, I think it's just a mental barrier from like everything that I'm hearing a lot of people. And you know, I think it's like the Peter Schiff meme too. It's like the old man yelling at clouds, right? I mean, he's just going to keep yelling at things until yelling at the price action until like he just maybe eventually buys. I don't know if I feel like maybe he's too far gone at this point, but he's going to be yelling at Bitcoin crashing to 100K at some point in time in the near future. But I mean, I truly believe like this cycle, it's going to really ramp some things up. And like with more people that come into the Bitcoin space, the next new class of Bitcoiners is always going to be bigger. But a big, you know, driver of that, like I said, is price. So I don't know, man. I do see that 100K mark coming here soon. I actually made a bet with Julian of Kinetic Finance that Bitcoin needs to hit 100K by the end of the year, or else I got to eat 2 Carolina Reaper peppers. And if if it hits 100K, then he's got to do the same. So I don't know, man. My spice tolerance isn't that great, so I'm hoping that it does. I still stand by it, man. We got some time here.
Well, I think so again, like, I'm not sure if the 100K will melt the internet as I always thought. I think if we would get to 200-250K, that it would be ridiculous if that would not break the internet, right? But again, I'm not that sure. People are very stuck in their beliefs. But for example, what Julian is doing, you know, he has a big following on TikTok. I think he does really well at, you know, playing into the current way people gather information, you know, playing around with this, you know, all the TikTok styles and very clear messaging. And so I think that's very cool. And I think he also like reaches another type of audience with that. But I mean, the price will have to go up because the governments have to print money, you know, like it's what Greg Foss always said, it says it's just math. And I think that was also for me one of these moments where I just realized, okay, 35 trillion or 30 trillion, you know, when I thought about that, like, it's only 2 years ago, right? Like, who's going to pay that back? Who believes that they're going to pay that back, right? And you have like these classic economists that say like, well, debt is a good thing because it's backed by the promise of the people pay, that the borrowers will pay it back. Like, that's the stupidest, one of the stupidest things I've ever heard, like, if you believe in that. But it seems like a lot of central banks are still buying, you know, US treasuries. A lot of big companies are still buying US treasuries. You know, they are playing the short-term game. I don't know what the percentages are right now, but there was this moment where, you know, the short term got more, gave you more than the long term. Yeah, of course, people try to play that game. And then, you know, the US government says, you know, this is all great, but, well, over a long enough time frame, you know that they will never be able to pay that back. And there's going to be a point where, again, it's a rational thought, but I don't know if people will follow that. But, you know, enough people will realize that they will never pay back that debt, and they will stop buying these treasuries in such a significant way that the US government's only solution is to print money. And that will, you know, accelerate this debt spiral that James Lavish talks about a lot. And so eventually it's just math. And I think for the people that are studying Bitcoin or that already get Bitcoin and trying to save in Bitcoin, it's all about finding, how do you say, like, these anchor points to keep trusting yourself. This may take another 10 years before we really, really have this mass adoption and, you know, big treasury problems and all the things that we talk about. And so I kind of see it as this journey where you're constantly questioning, you know, can I trust myself? Can I still trust myself? Is my understanding big enough that I can trust myself? And what I like about Bitcoin is that, yeah, you can verify that for yourself. Every time I think this, I just think like, is Bitcoin still decentralized and secure? If yes, then, you know, I tell the voice in my head to shut up. And, you know, I think that's the test. And that's why it's also so psychological and spiritual at the same time. You know, like, it's also a discovery inside yourself, of yourself.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's just, you know, one, it just, like, it's kind of almost like a pride thing, right? You got to be able to say, like, all right, I'm not a know-it-all. Maybe the things I was taught previously are wrong. And it gives you, like, that critical thinking skills. So, you know, I don't know if everybody, like, I don't know if everybody, like, is really, I guess, enjoys learning. And I think a big part of that is just the school system and kind of how they structure it and beat it out of you over years, where people just finally think like, all right, I got to the end of the road. I got my high school diploma, college degree, whatever it is. And they think that the learning's done from there. So, you know, I think it takes somebody who, a special kind of person, to get to Bitcoin early, one, not be like really forced to do it. But I think, unfortunately, the way things are going, more and more people are going to be forced to look at their finances, forced to really budget out things, and forced to really just try to focus on money. And, you know, unfortunately, that doesn't lead to a good quality of life. You know, the biggest driver of divorce is generally money. So, you know, there's a lot of things that it affects. And I think everybody that gets into the Bitcoin space then realizes all the things that inflation has just negatively affected, whether it's food, pharmaceutical drugs, you know, even just relationships in general, just the way people behave, you know, seeing the decline in birth rates over time, like, all these things are just drastically connected. And, you know, the best thing you could do is just, like, equip yourself with this knowledge and figure out a way to live the life that you know, actually want to live. But unfortunately, a lot of people don't do that until it's too late. And then, you know, they live with some regret.
Yeah. But how do you see that around you? For example, I think it's fascinating that there's a lot of these, like, TikToks or Instagram reels where people are like, you know, I have 2 master's degrees, and they show them, right? And I applied to like 100 jobs. They all said no. So now I'm rolling sushi somewhere, you know, and they are just questioning, like, did I do the right thing? What is this worth? I'm 100K in student debt and all these things. Like, how do you see that around you?
Well, I mean, that's a great question. You know, like, around me, I see, like, less and less friends getting, like, married until, like, later, waiting for that. Just in general, like, it's interesting because I live in Florida. So, you know, in Florida, I would say most people are, I guess how Bitcoiners would say is are fairly based, right? I mean, they realize, you know, you got to work out, get some sun, you got to, you know, eat food or eat the right food. There's like, I know a lot of people that are super anti seed oils and are very much not into Bitcoin, but are like kind of, you know, tangentially, you know, aware of Bitcoin because of like all these things. So I see more and more people waking up to that fact. But I mean, on the flip side of things too, like it's the culture in Florida, I don't know if it's necessarily like get wifed up or get married really young and sort of, you know, I guess like start a family and everything like that. So a lot of my friends that I've made there are definitely talking about waiting till later in life to do that. Maybe not even starting to have kids until they're 30. You know, I think that that's just the delay. And, you know, I mean, my parents didn't or had me when they were 30, but I was the second kid, you know, so like a lot of differences in that way. But on the flip side of things, like I grew up in the South, in the United States. So in the South, it is like a very traditional kind of way. So a lot of friends from high school or friends from college are already married with kids too. So I'm seeing it like kind of on both sides of things, but you know, it's interesting. A lot of them are, you know, still doing their husband and, you know, the wife are, you know, still doing the 9-to-5 grind. Both of them are working, the kids going to daycare immediately as soon as possible, you know, sort of thing. So, you know, I think it's just like a different way of life than maybe our parents had to go through. And I think, you know, I think it's not really a net positive, unfortunately, for the way things are going.
Yeah, it's interesting. I again, you know, as someone from Europe, I'm looking at it from a distance, of course, like through these TikToks and stuff. But yeah, if you see these stats, for example, like credit card delinquencies or defaults are at all time high, like COVID savings are gone, and all these things. I mean, I even have it here in my country, like in the weekend, all the terraces and all the restaurants are full. And we've also had 3-5% inflation for, I don't know, last 2 years or since COVID. So, yeah, or everyone is secretly eating ramen, or I don't know how they do it, or all the savings are gone or something. But yeah, as I said before, I think that it will take some time before it really goes bad. But then, you know, from what I understand from people that I listen to that are like really have a good financial background and they do the analysis, they say like, you know, this is inevitable. It will happen at some point. And yeah, it's kind of like we are on the Titanic, but not sure if we have hit the iceberg yet, you know.
Yeah, I mean, like James Lavish puts it great, we're on this debt spiral. I mean, like, you know, if you go on the U.S. debt clock on that website and you look at the amount of debt that the U.S. is getting into, you'll get nauseous just watching those numbers go up like crazy. And I'm chuckling and laughing at that, but it's not really a laughing matter, right? I mean, it's like, how are we going to get out of this? We're essentially putting debt on more debt on more debt, and we're just borrowing from the future. And we're like, hey, you know, whatever, Jen, whatever it is now that's in college, you guys are going to have to go out. You're going to have to make 60 grand a year. And, you know, people 5-10 years ago were making 60 grand a year. That 60 grand is probably worth half as much as it was, you know, before. You're going to have 7 roommates in a giant house or live at your parents' house for a lot longer and not really grow up. I mean, like, you know, it's a lot of things that are like, you know, limiting factors. And it just, you know, doesn't really let young people live their life that they want to live. And, you know, and then that hurts the future of America from companies and everything else as well. So it's just like a trickle down effect where it's not really helping the young generation create these prosperous companies. So I mean, it's making it harder on the entrepreneur, you know, to kind of get companies started and everything like that. So it's definitely an uphill battle, and it's not built for everybody. But I think that, you know, the inflationary factors are definitely making it harder to be an entrepreneur and go through that cycle.
Are you looking for the easiest way to get your Bitcoin off an exchange? Well, I've got it for you. It's Foundation Devices. They've got the number one hardware wallet in the Passport. They've even got a concierge service that can help you get your Bitcoin off an exchange within 1 hour private onboarding session. And they've got a great app too, which will give you extremely, extremely, extremely private features on that app, so you can use Bitcoin in the most secure way possible. So I've been working hard trying to get sponsors to help you get your Bitcoin off an exchange, and I found it with Foundation. And you can store your seed phrase with a stamp seed punch plate as well. So pair all those together, use promo code GreenCandle at foundation.xyz, and you'll get $10 off your entire order. All right, that's enough for me. Back to the show.
Yeah, I love the looking at, well, I don't love it, but I think it's just very interesting when you look at this US debt clock, right? I saw a stat that I think it was like 30% of GDP is now used to pay off. I don't know if 30 is right, but it's between 20 and 30 or 30-ish of the income tax revenue is used to pay off the interest on the debt, right? So as an American, you work, if you work full time, you work one, maybe almost 2 days a week to help your government pay the interest on money they borrowed and used on whatever before you were probably born, right? That is so exactly. Insane. It's so insane. That thought is so insane. And when you look at this US debt clock, when it says like the national debt is, 0.6 trillion, it says debt per citizen $105,000. So for every citizen, there's already $105,000 borrowed from the future, spent on something that is basically, yeah, it's just gone. And you have to work for that to help your government pay that back. But that, yeah, and that is per citizen. That includes the babies, right? But per taxpayer, it's $271,000.
What do you think the average salary is in the US?
Good question. I think it's around probably like 35-ish or something.
It's double. It's like six. It's 63. 70. But still, the average US debt for a current taxpayer is like 3.5 times or maybe a little less, but a little over 3 times the amount of their average salary in the US. So it's absolutely insane. And that debt is just going to keep exponentially growing. And believe it or not, wages are not going to be exponentially growing at that pace, right? I mean, even if inflation was at 2 or 3%, right? And you get the 2 or 3% raise. I mean, at this point in time, we're just the salaries are just too far behind the debt. So
yeah. But what's the general income tax? What's the average income tax?
Well, it's different from state to state. So, I mean, like, you pay like 30%. I mean, it really depends. I think it's like 20 to 30% on income tax. And then you could have state income tax. You have sales tax. I mean, we get taxed up to our eyes out here. Anytime you move money around, there's a tax. And, I know it's a lot worse in Europe and in some other countries as well. But, I mean, you got to think like at, when America was over its existence, they were throwing tea in the harbor over, I think it was like a 1 or 3% tax at that point in time. But and now we're like, 40%, that's fine.
Yeah. But you said, debt per taxpayer, I'm looking at it too, 271,000.
Oh, 271. Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah. But so it's, if you take an average salary of 60K, right, and you get taxed, let's say effectively 50%, so 30K goes to the government. That's like nine years of the average person paying taxes to pay off or to help their government pay off the debt that they took on for that taxpayer. But that would assume that in those 9 years, that debt would not grow, right? Yeah. And this debt spiral concept from James Lavish actually says, the debt per taxpayer will grow because the US has to raise more debt to sustain the old debt, right? Like, so paying an old credit card with a new credit card. But let's say 9 years, right? So if you were 17, I don't know when you turn a taxpayer in America, or when you start working, right? Like your first job when you're younger, maybe when you're 16, from 16 to 25, you know, let's make it simplistic. You're working to pay tax, to help your government, you know, pay that interest, just the interest, by the way. Or, well, it's a debt, right? So you're paying you're working 9 years of your life to help your government pay off the debt that they took on, you know, not in your name, but on you as a taxpayer, right? And so with that money that you pay your government, nothing of quality will be created, right? Like nothing that will not be spent on, you know, what people argue a lot when they say like that's on roads or infrastructure or blah, 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 blah. No, it's just to pay off the debt. Yeah, that's wild. That's a wild.
Yeah, it's absolutely insane. I mean, like I said, like we've been, you know, kind of going through, it's just like, it's a never ending cycle. So what is the way out here, right? I mean, you look at El Salvador, it's the first country to not put debt on their budget for next year's budget. So I think, you know, obviously adopting Bitcoin has really helped through that movement. Obviously, there's been a lot of growth in El Salvador as well, including, you know, a lot of the roads, everything like that, you know, popping up seemingly. I wonder why, you know, I mean, a lot of people, a lot of tourists are starting to go to El Salvador as well. I mean, there's a lot of things that, you know, obviously it's a much smaller scale than something as grand as the US and, you know, the US dollar and everything like that. But I think it's a good model that other countries should start like really implementing there, you know, really start to go into, you know, that. I mean, even on like a company level, right? You look at Michael Saylor, the things that he's been able to do at MicroStrategy, it just makes sense to hold Bitcoin on the balance sheet to help pay off the debt. And I mean, even use traditional financial tools to buy up more Bitcoin, you know, has been something that he's been doing, and it's been, you know, brilliant. And it's helped out his company go from essentially a zombie company to one of the best performing stocks and the best performing stock in the S&P 500, just depending on the day. So, you know, I think it's absolutely like, it's a no brainer. And people have lined out the playbook for you. You just have to implement it at this point in time, no matter what scale you're at, whether it's a country, yeah, business, or personally.
I think that's an interesting point, right? If people that experience this debasement of money problem, if they experience it worse than you because they have more money and they choose to adopt Bitcoin to save themselves from this melting ice cube, then, you know, if you have less than $500 million, like when Michael Saylor started, you should be paying attention to Bitcoin, because if he has that problem, you have that problem as well, right? Unless you have no money. I get these messages sometimes, right? Like, I don't have a lot of money. I don't have any excess savings, right? Like, how should I get into Bitcoin? And I just always say like that, obviously that's rough. But once you realize that Bitcoin is the best way to store wealth, it also invites you to, you know, do your best, like really work hard, figure out how do I provide value in a better way, I think, than, you know, and some people won't agree, you know, but taking a stupid corporate job that maybe pays you 100K a year, but where you're bored as fuck and you don't like it, you know, and that you dread to go to every day. Eventually, it is way nicer to do something hard and become good at something, whatever that is, right? It doesn't have to be like a fancy, something fancier that other people think is fancy, but just be good at it. And if you're good enough, then you can make money with it, you know. And if you make money with it and get your life in order, then eventually you can store everything that's left in Bitcoin. But yeah, well, Michael Saylor had a $500 million problem and he decided to get into Bitcoin, right? So why would the average person not do that? Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, 100%. And it just like, yeah, I mean, I don't know. I've had this argument with one of my friends here. He's like, well, you know, if he's a 500 millionaire, half a billionaire, whatever, or close to a billionaire, he's still going to be that with or without Bitcoin, whether it tanks or it's up. So like, why listen to them? And I'm like, what do you mean? These are the guys that get to this point, you know, with their money strategy and everything like that. So these are the people you should be listening to, not some Joe Schmo who's living in an apartment, you know, by himself with just like a dog and just, you know, kind of going through it that way. Like, you should listen to the people who have made it, and they'll give you the advice. If you just listen, you just gotta listen and not think that they're trying to bullshit you. Like, what incentive do they have for you to buy Bitcoin? It's not like you're gonna buy so much that it moves their bags. I mean, I don't think I'm gonna be affecting Michael Saylor's bags that much, you know, by buying Bitcoin and so you know, it's funny. I just never really understood that.
Yeah, I searched on Twitter for my Twitter name, Bram K, and then uncle, because I use this a lot, right? I quote tweeted the tweet that said, you know, it was a Texas professor presents that Bitcoin is the first time in history of humankind where we see the value of scarcity illustrated. And then, you know, I quote posted saying, but the economy guy on the TV says it's a Ponzi. My uncle lost money on a doggy coin. So how can this be a thing? You know, like, that's how people think. And last week when Nayib Bukele of El Salvador was meeting the vice president of Argentina, you know, I say, like, country leaders are discussing Bitcoin together while you are not paying attention because your drunk uncle says it's a tulip pond. Like, this is really, I hear these arguments all the time. Yeah, but my uncle, and he lost this FTX thing and blah, blah. Like, you know, eventually, if you drill it down, it's basically start thinking for yourself. Don't listen to other people. Don't trust what we say. Just think like, okay, these guys are really into this Bitcoin thing. Should I pay attention or not? If not, you know, all good. And if you want to pay attention, I think you can DM either of us if you have questions or need help or whatever, right? But it's up to you as the individual to be like, okay, I'm going to think for myself. And if you hear us talk and you dismiss it and think like, oh, these guys are crazy, they only talk about Bitcoin because they have Bitcoin, think about the fact, I always use this, like, it would be very weird if we would talk about Bitcoin and not own Bitcoin. Like, that would be way worse than, you know, actually putting our money where our mouth is.
Yeah, 100%, man. I mean, yeah, I just, you know, I tell my friends all about it just because, you know, that's the, I mean, I'm trying to help them out, man. I want just them to prosper as well as much. So, I mean, it's just, it's always interesting. They always think I'm just like full of it sometimes. So, I mean, sometimes I don't even have a conversation with them. But I mean, whoever wants to talk to me about it, I'm always open.
All right. Maybe a fun question to end. And I'll answer it too. What makes you most bullish on Bitcoin, like, for the next decade?
The next decade. All right. That's a long time. I don't know.
Short and long time.
Yeah, it's true. I mean, I think that, you know, you're just seeing like a lot of traction, just more eyeballs and more tools on it, right? So, you know, although I don't recommend buying the ETFs, I think the ETFs in the United States developing, getting traditional finance into it is absolutely huge. It allows companies to now put it on their balance sheet and be a little bit more balanced. I know, obviously, Michael Saylor did that, but we saw four companies start to pop up and do that as well. At least publicly traded ones. So we'll see more, like, you know, a company like Fold is becoming public. They've already got Bitcoin on their balance sheet. So, you know, a lot of these publicly traded companies are going to now be holding Bitcoin. You're going to see the ones that implement this strategy start to, you know, really prosper, and then countries as well. So, I mean, I think it's just the combination of traditional finance, businesses holding it on the balance sheet, and, you know, now countries getting into a Bitcoin standard, whether that's holding it in the treasury, strategic reserve, what have you. I think that, you know, I mean, at that point in time, it's only going to be, you know, off to the races here. I mean, we've seen, you know, gold is like a, you know, a perfect example of something that's almost like a leading indicator, I would say, for what Bitcoin's going to do, except for, you know, gold is not quite as quickly moving. But, you know, we've seen a net outflow in the ETFs and the gold ETFs for the past, you know, 3 to 4 years. And we've seen the gold price nearly double, if not more, in the past 5. Now, why is that? It's because central banks are buying up gold. So they're realizing the true, like, scarcity aspect. And I think, you know, the ETFs are a one step for everybody to start to get to, okay, I need real Bitcoin. I need to hold my own keys. I need to be self-sovereign. And I think, you know, all these touch points that are happening now in 10 years down the road, that's where we'll see people truly understand the power of Bitcoin. And yeah, we were just beating them, man. We were just before them. So, but yeah, I'd love to hear your reason why you're bullish for this next decade.
Yeah. So I think short term, as you said before, you know, number goes up is probably the main thing. So if it's not 100K, then at 200K, people will really wake up and buy more. I have an episode coming out with Jeff Ross, who's like, yeah, it's going to be 500K Q4 2025, if not 700 to a million. And I'm like, you know, I cannot do the analysis that would substantiate that, but I would be good with that. I mean, if it really goes that high within 12 months, yeah, then it's undeniable anymore. And then I think we could get into this accelerated game theory where countries will be buying. I think some people argue, you know, the higher the price, the more interesting it gets for countries to get in, because then, you know, they see it's a serious asset class. So that makes me bullish, because I think we will end higher. I'm personally more around the 200K type mark. We'll see, but something will happen. I mean, these are the cycles of Bitcoin, and the problem is becoming more and more obvious to more and more people, companies and countries. It will go up. And I think over the long term, I like what Michael Saylor says about, you know, in 2033, 99% of Bitcoin will be mined. The last 1% will be mined over the next 107 years. So that's basically a rounding error, that last 1%. And yeah, you know, all the Bitcoin basically will be mined in 2033. And if you're now remotely paying attention as a country, an organization or a person, you will have to start paying attention at least within the next, you know, 9 years, or else it is really too late. So there will be, I think, kind of this inflection point where like interest meets the absolute digital scarcity, and that will really propel Bitcoin forward. So yeah, I follow kind of this digital gold rush thesis, but yeah, so that makes me most bullish.
Yeah, 100%, man. I mean, yeah, I'm still holding on to that 100K before the end of the year. But yeah, man, I think at this point in time, we're starting to let the foot off the gas here with the interest rate hikes. And we're going to see, you know, maybe some more liquidity in the market. And, you know, after that, we'll start to see some more money printing, because I think, you know, everything is not all peaches and daisies under the surface. So, you know, that massive amounts of money printing, we saw Bitcoin go from 4 to, let's call it 70,000, which is about 17.5x, you know, I mean, maybe we 17.5x from what was it, like 20K this time. So, that is, let me do some quick math here while we got
like 350 ish.
Yeah. So like a 350, I think would be a good estimate. But on the flip side of things, like maybe that 20K wasn't the low. Maybe the low, because we've been floating around this 60K mark, maybe that's the low. And then 17.5X to that is 1,050,000. So, you know, you never know. I wouldn't be surprised if we end up in somewhere in this range in the next 12 months and shit just goes bonkers. And we're that, you know, Bitcoin mean with the guys just riding up the roller coaster straight up.
Yeah. Well, I like the what you just said, like it just goes up. Fuck, I forgot the meme. But anyway, you know, like that's also why I remember what I wanted to say. But that's why I love Bitcoin. Like the memes are manifested, right? And we'll see that. But what you just said, that's why I think Bitcoin is so entertaining. You know, we are in it. We are trying to learn still every day. We're trying to share with other people. And whatever happens, happens. But for me, it's just really entertaining and really fun and enjoyable to watch. So yeah, super fun to chat. Maybe we should do this again in the future. That was a nice unprepared jam. And yeah, man, I'll point people to your channel to check out your stuff. And I think it's really cool that we are doing this together. So thanks, man.
Yeah, 100%, man. Yeah, thanks for having me on the show. And thanks for coming on the show. Everybody smash the subscribe button for Bitcoin Millennials. Give it a like. You know, keep spreading the word, and yeah, man, keep doing what you're doing. Maybe we'll get an in-person one of these days. We'll run into each other at one of these conferences, and we should do content there. So I think that would be a lot of fun.
Totally, man. Well, enjoy your day, and we'll stay in touch.
All right, man. Have a good one.
Cheers.
Thank you for tuning in to the latest episode of the State of Bitcoin podcast. If you really enjoyed this one, I've got another one cooking up for you. You can click that right here. And you can go to the next episode, which is an absolute banger, where you know I'm bringing you only the latest and greatest guests. Or if you're looking for more macro-related content, you could check out my other channel, Macro Insights Pod. I got it linked for you right here. So where I'm bringing you more about stocks, real estate, traditional finance stuff. So go ahead and check that out. And if you enjoyed this podcast, go ahead and hit that like, hit that subscribe button, and tell a friend to tell a friend. All right, enough from me. I'll see you at the next one.